Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault?
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Iconic, Rockfin, Odyssey, Band.video, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks so much. We appreciate your amazing and continued support. You can follow the show on Twitter at Macroaggressions. You can connect with me through the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. Thank you to our sponsors. We couldn't do it without your amazing support as well. C60 Purple Power has been with us for like 2 years now. They are making the best batch of C60 out there. What is C60, you may ask? Well, it is a free radical sponge. It is a naturally occurring carbon molecule. It was theorized by Buckminster Fuller. It was later discovered by a team of scientists in the 80s. They won the Nobel Prize for it. It's kind of a big deal. You'll never hear about it on your nightly news, but you'll catch from time to time in the alternative media people talking about it. Ken Schwartz, the chief scientist over at C60 Purple Power, is making the best batch of that stuff around. You can do yourself a favor and read about it. If you're interested, go to shopc60.com and just take a look around. If you decide you want to buy something, use the promo code MACRO to save yourself some money. They have free shipping inside the United States. And they're, look, this is the most powerful antioxidant known to man. If you're having medical issues or someone in your family is having some medical concerns, maybe do this. Go to the website. The link is in the show notes, shopc60.com, and read about it. See if you think it might be right for you. It helps with a variety of ailments, optimizes mitochondrial function. It boosts energy level and mental clarity, promotes a balanced immune response. It does all kinds of things, but I do have to read this. These statements and products have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, prevent, or mitigate any disease. But you should still find out about it anyway. ShopC60.com, promo code MACRO. Also, thanks to the folks over at My Patriot Supply. They built a landing page for us called preparewithmacroaggressions.com. And from there, you can do all kinds of things. You can get yourself a 4-week supply of storable food. You can get a 3-month supply. You can find all kinds of things. They have water purification, air filtration, survival coffee, which lasts 25 years. I don't know how that all works, but hey, they do at least. But if you're so inclined, look, get a 4-week supply of food. They're going to send you 40 pounds of food in 2 buckets that will contain breakfast, lunch, dinners, drinks, snacks, all kinds of things. You can pick it up for $247. Better to have it than not have it. Be proactive, not reactive. We know the madness that is coming our way. Hopefully we can mitigate it by at least being prepared. So if you are so inclined, the link will be in the description. Prepare with macroaggressions.com. Look, you can go through my sponsor and knock it all out in 10 minutes, and that's great. or just go to the store and take care, buy a little bit extra each time and start thinking like that. Let's get ourselves ready. We know what's coming. Well, I'll tell you, now that we got the business out of the way, now we can get to the fun stuff. I feel like I have been watching Freeman fly for 20 years. Maybe I have. I don't know. It seems like a long time. But making his return back to the interviews after a long hiatus, we are so stoked to have Freeman fly here. What's going on, Freeman? Good to see you. How are you?
Thank you so much. Yeah. I mean, it's been a long run, 18 years of doing this. You know, there's two sides to my story. One is the life that I have lived, and then the other is my research. And a lot of that tends to jumble together because I've been one that's been out there and doing things and being in the midst of it all. But yeah, it's been an amazing ride.
You have most definitely been out there, and you have certainly been doing things. Did you ever get on the wrong side of some people out there for the things that you were talking about, movies you were making?
Most recently, I was run out of a neighbor's yard for admitting that I like Alex Jones. Can't wait. Alex Jones was right. Sure.
Alex Jones was right. Nice. That's funny.
Yeah. But for the most part, no. I can't think of any time that I get welcomed. Like I walked into the Temple of the 33rd, right? Very first time back in there in 99, I think it was. I walked into the Supreme Council of the 33rd, went up to it. You know, we're just walking through it. We were there for the WTO IMF protest, right? Mm-hmm. And there were 500,000 people there to protest the IMF, WTO. This was right after the Battle of Seattle.
Right.
And they had just shot everybody with rubber bullets and you know, all that good stuff. Yeah. So I found myself in D.C. for this protest. Now, this was a good reason to not go to January 6th. Here I was in 1999 at the WTO IMF protest. And I got there early. I got to know all the people running the protest, the people who signed the permits. Well, guess who were the first ones surrounded and wandered off, you know, taken off by the riot squads were the very people who filled the permits, right? Mm-hmm. Then at another point before the actual protest on the Friday beforehand, they had kind of a practice walk where we walked to the Capitol, walked to the Washington Monument and back, but no protest yet, right? Just kind of just, mm-hmm. you know, killing time, I guess. But there were thousands of us doing this. And as I walked past one street, all of a sudden, two lines of riot squads just blocked off everyone behind me. And I mean, I was just minutes from being on the wrong side of that riot squad.
Wow.
And they just locked in their children, Japanese tourists, little old ladies, anyone that happened to be on that block at that moment. And they just kept them there. They held them there for hours. Then they started bringing in school buses and city buses and started hauling them all away. 600 people. And so I'm out there. I'm yelling at the riot squads. You know, I'm like, hey, what about their constitutional rights? What are you guys doing? You know,
right.
And it was actually my very first interview because Indie Media was there at that time. Mm-hmm. And this was the first opportunity, like with the battle for Seattle, when Indie Media, I was able to witness everything that happened in Seattle. I knew more that happened to people in Seattle than the people that were there. Wow. So they were there. They were interviewing me because I was getting loud and raucous with the riot squads, but they're all just standing there ignoring me, right? Their shields weren't even looking my way. And then I yelled out to them, how many of you are widow's sons? And this was code word for Freemason, if you don't know.
Mm.
And every head turned my way. Including Uh-oh. The lieutenants and everybody. All of a sudden, I had everybody's attention because they were all widow's sons. They were all Masons. They knew what I was saying. You know, nobody else did, but they sure did. Now, they took these 600 people away. They brought them down to this dank underground parking garage and kept them there for 13 hours with no bathrooms, no water, no nothing. They ended up charging everybody with parading without a permit. Made a quick 30 grand, you know, $50 a head. You had to pay to get out of the bus. And if you couldn't, you were taken away. But, you know, I saw immediately what was going down with, you know, what was happening. And then I went to have a lunch and they were showing the news and the news was showing all this violence at this protest. I saw no violence. I mean, it was a giant street party. And I'm like, what the heck? So this was kind of my introduction to what it's like to be on that side of things. But
yeah.
That's... Then I ended up at the Temple of the 33rd, yeah, and they welcomed me with open arms. They knew, they saw my knowledge, and the librarian there was so fascinated that she took me to all the places I wasn't allowed to be inside of this mausoleum. And then she's like, "You're so amazing. Here's Morals and Dogma and the Glossary to Morals and Dogma. Just take them." And so I ran out of that building. Yeah, that was crazy. So quite a weekend for me, really.
But you already had, obviously, at that point, well, your background, you're like a ancient archaeology degree. Is that right?
Architecture.
Ancient architecture. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So and if you know anything about ancient architecture, you're obviously going to be know about the Masons. So that seems like it would be a good fit. Where did they teach? Did you learn that at KU or no? Or was that sort of, I mean, is that part of when you go through college in your ancient architecture, do they teach you about the Masons or are they quiet about that?
They are quiet about that. I was certain that my lead professor was a Mason. You know, he opened the class with, "Well, you know, in the 21st century, we couldn't build the Great Pyramid. The stones are too large. We have no cranes to move them," you know, and that was like the open introduction. But for me, I had gone to community college in Florida and brought into this honors program called Interdisciplinary Studies. And this was actually a study that was 2.5 years, took care of all of your required courses. So when I did go to KU, I didn't have to take all the crap classes. I just went straight to my major. But in interdisciplinary studies at Kansas, at the community college, that was the Club of Rome's open introduction to the world. That was us being trained and conditioned. The very first book we read was Limits to Growth.
No and way.
So, yeah.
Oh my God. I've been going on and on and on about the Limits to Growth. And so, yeah, I mean that. Wow.
So in that class, I met this genius, and he was an occultist that followed Aleister Crowley, had all his works. Now, you got to realize this was 1991, so there was no World Wide Web to go get this information. It didn't exist. You know, you had to buy the books, and he had them, and he was studying all this, and he was showing it to us in class. And I remember he showed it to us and said, "Well, this is esoteric." And we're all like, "That's not a word," you know, like, "What does that mean?" And he's like, "Well, it means you don't know what it means." But he was a genius, right? But he was a rock and roll punk star genius at the same time, was straight into transhumanism, ready for his Blaine plant and all of that. But he was showing me books, and we came across Freemasonry in these books that he showed me. And I was like, "Wait a minute, I recognize these symbols." And he's like, "What do you mean?" And I'm like, "They're in my dad's top drawer. I used to wear them as insignia when I played Battlestar Galactica as a kid." Right. You know, I'd wear my dad's cufflinks, the compass and square, for my battle stars.
Just like Starbuck, right?
Exactly. And so he's like, "Well, your dad's a Freemason." And I'm like, "Hell no, not my dad. You know, there's no way he's into this." So I go and I confront dad. You know, I'm like, "Hey, what's going on here? You know, are you a member of this secret society?" And then it turns out there's this long history of my family that, wow, I mean, it would take us some time to get through.
Wow.
But my family is deep, right? Like, I had no idea. They're all dead now, so it doesn't matter. But my dad was like, "Well, yeah, you know, I'm a worshipful master. I was raised in Kaiserslautern and Bavaria and all this stuff. And I have all the pictures and everything of him going through these rituals." And then he's just like, "Well, you know, I also worked for Hynek, and I was chasing flying saucers back in the day." And I'm like, "What?" You know, I was so mad because I've been studying UFOs my entire life, and dad never once mentioned any of this, right? I'm 25 when I went to college. So you imagine, you know, 15 years of studying UFOs. And now dad's telling me, and he says, "Yeah, I was stationed on this South Sea Island, and it was my job to man the radars. And, we would, you know, it was me that would call in the UFOs and the flying saucers." And I was like, "You mean flying saucers are real?" And he's like, "Absolutely, they're real." And that was all I got out of him.
That's it?
That was it. I tried to schedule him for a show as my first whistleblower on my television show. I was on Access with Alex, right? So I stumbled into an Access show. I was just in Austin for the weekend, and this guy heard me talking, and he says, "You need a TV show." I'm like, "What are you talking about?"
Sure.
He's like, "I'll pay for it right now if you'll do it." And I swear, I mean, I was only in Austin for the weekend. I didn't live there. I was in my van, you know, like, and so I said, "All right, I'll do it. I'll do it." And then I started hearing this Alex Jones character on the radio, and I'm like, "Man, I want to meet this guy." So I wander into the studios, and very first day I walk in, there's Alex. His show was right before mine. So I ended up on an Access show following Alex Jones, and that was pretty amazing too.
That's wild.
But so I tried to get Dad on that show, and he died the very day that he was supposed to be on my program.
Oh no.
Really bizarre. Just did not wake up that day.
Yeah. Was it like mysterious circumstances, or was it just because
was he about to give me deep secrets and his mind control programming kicked in and he just died? I don't know. Now, you know, these were the thoughts going through my head.
Yeah, man, that's crazy. Well, what was his job? His job was to man the radar dish, and that was all you got out of him, was that he said that UFOs are real. My job was to man the radar dish, and I mean, but like, he knew you were into it the whole time, right? He knew.
Right. But I have to believe that Dad's life was mostly top secret.
And yeah.
So I don't know.
There was never any push. So you've got a family sort of history of being involved in masonry or of some sort. How does it work? Is there a time where they say, where the dad goes to the son and says, "All right, now you're of age. Now I explain to you about the Freemasons, and would you want to join me in this thing?" I mean, how does that work when it's multi-generational? At what point does the next generation get pulled in? Is this an older man's game, or is this something that you can be brought into relatively young and grow with the society, or how does that all work?
They're definitely trying to get the younger crowd now. That's for sure. You know, they have Shaquille O'Neal out there promoting it, and a bunch of other young celebrities that are announcing their Mason connections. But the real philosophy of Freemasonry, you'll see their bumper stickers that say "to be one, ask one." Mm-hmm. And this is because technically they're not allowed to recruit.
Mm.
And this is because when you come to the lodge, you must come of your own free will and accord. So I'm sure there are family lineages that talk their children into it. But if you were a true fundamental Freemason, you would never bring it up. You would have to come of your own free will and accord. And that's part of the ritual. That's part of what we see in them revealing the secrets to us over, you know, Hollywood and those ways, is that you must come of your own free will and accord. And that's like their spiritual barrier that they must get past.
So then they, by doing that, it makes it your idea, not their idea. Okay.
Exactly.
So this is part of this like cosmic karmic cleansing where they're like, I didn't drag you here. You asked a mate, you asked one, you saw one, you wanted to be one, you asked one. And then now you're here. Now you've got one pant leg pulled up, and that's your problem, right?
Exactly. Put on these old stinky pajamas.
So I'm curious though, like, so Freemasonry, we know, I mean, we hear about it. It's secret to the extent that people don't go out and actively look for it, but you see buildings, you see logos, like you mentioned, not an ad campaign, but it's only hidden to the extent that people aren't out there looking at it. But what is the role of Freemasonry in Hollywood? Because they seem to have, well, I mean, you've done outstanding work on Hollywood. I almost don't even know where to begin, but we've got this unusual sort of component that goes through Hollywood. We've got Hollywood, the music industry, the business behind all of this, and then the government influence within Hollywood. What is the Freemasonry connection to Hollywood, I guess?
That would be difficult for me to answer, I guess. I mean, we see the signs and symbols everywhere. We see it coming through. And Unfortunately, when I created the concept of corporate logos and their occult meanings, like I was the one who went around and photographed all the different corporate logos and came and showed them to the world and said, hey, you know, this is what these mean. Unfortunately, that was kind of stolen, hijacked by David Icke. He didn't know me. He didn't know, but you look at his original works and you'll see he's using my artwork for his corporate logo stuff. But he changed the title to Illuminati corporate logos.
Mm.
And this was rather bothersome to me because this Illuminati doesn't technically exist. You know, the Bavarian Illuminati of Adam Weishaupt, that was banned back in the 1700s. And the only follow up to the Illuminati would be the Ordo Templi Orientis, the OTO of Aleister Crowley. So when the title got changed from Freemasonic corporate logos to Illuminati corporate logos, it really disturbed the whole study for everyone. And this term Illuminati kept going around. And I mean, the term Illuminati can be used for the bloodlines, for the elite. It's, you know, ethereal. It doesn't have a meaning. But when you say these are Freemasonic signs of allegiance, so if you were to see, Chase's square or, you know, the different very innocuous seeming symbols of like a canted square, right? So a square turned on its point. You'll see that everywhere, right? Enron, Dell.
I was just going to say Enron is the one that comes to mind. I think they used a big E, but it was still like a block E, but it was turned on its side. And exactly. Yeah, Dell. Yeah, you mentioned Dell. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, you'll see a lot of those. And that is a symbol within Freemasonry of Osiris.
Okay.
And it comes from the 47th proposition of Euclid. And there's actually Isis, Osiris, and Horus, or Ra. Let's see. I have to go through that one again. But it actually mathematically is a symbol of them circling the altar in the Freemasonic Lodge. So when you brought in as a master mason to go through your master mason ritual, it's a death and resurrection ritual where you pretend to be Hiram Abiff and you don't know what's going to happen to you. As you're saying, you were dressed in like pink at the music videos, at the video awards, you know, you're dressed in these pajamas, one pant leg rolled up, one shirt bared, a noose put around your neck, a blindfold, and then a sword at your throat as you walk in, where you admit that you come of your own free will and accord. Well, as you do this ritual, you're brought through a death, and all of the brethren come in. There's three of them, the ruffians that clobber you in the head. And they have had some deaths or injuries during these rituals when they get a little too excited about it, but generally not. And so you circumambulate or circle the altar. And this mathematically becomes the symbol of the 47th proposition of Euclid. So that canted square actually symbolizes to a mason that sees it, his circling of the altar during his master ritual. So as I studied Masonic ritual in depth, you know, after I found out Dad was in it and I got all his secret books and I started decoding them and everything, I learned all the different rituals and most of them, a lot of them. And then when I started seeing corporate logos, I was seeing an entirely different language all of a sudden. I was really reading these signs. So I feel that that got kind of destroyed by people like David Icke. And, you know, no, I don't blame him for calling it Illuminati. I don't think it was a nefarious act for him. It was just that the science got lost in the terminology.
Yeah, I wonder. So what is this? It's like understanding a coded language, right? If you know it, you look out, you go out through the world, you see the coded language and it speaks to you. You understand this. So if I'm a master mason or a high ranking mason, you know, and I go by and I see that Enron logo or I see a Dell logo and everything, what is that telling me? Is that telling me this corporation is on my team? Is this telling me that the graphic designer that works for Dell is a Mason? Is this telling me that the board of directors are all on it? Is there a is the forward facing, public facing part of the company one thing, and then there's some nefarious sort of shenanigans going on in the back? Like, how would I decipher that? I would fully recognize that logo comes from, you know, from my lodge, you know, like, this is one of our guys. Do I give the grip? Do I give the secret? I mean, how do you, like, you go for an interview at Dell, and then you give the guy the special grip, and they say, oh, we got a separate interview for you. Like, how does this all work?
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty close. Yeah. You know, I haven't
I was just making that up.
But yeah, no, basically that's what it is. You know, signs of allegiance, letting the other brethren know that you're in the club. And so then, you know, my dad, like, I would bring my dad the occult stuff and even the scientific stuff. I remember bringing him stuff on HAARP and all of this back in the day. But I would bring him the occult stuff and, like, Albert Pike's Morals and Dogma. You know, I read the entire book through and through. And he's like, oh, I'm not into any of that gobbledygook, you know, all these Masons. So there's, like, those that join just to get the insider. You know, my dad built nukes for a living, and I'm sure that's because he was a Mason. He chased flying saucers because he was a Mason. You know, he raised through the ranks in the military and such. Like, you can't be above E8 without joining Masonry. So most will join for these reasons. And so that would be what they would see is, oh, here's an opportunity for me as a brethren to be able to rise through these ranks. But then there's the others that join for the occult reasons, and they honestly are few and far between. And you'll find that a majority of these actually join the OTO, the magical practices of this sex magic. And so if you're in an OTO lodge, they'll all admit to being master masons. Yeah, yeah, we're all master masons. But if you go into a Mason lodge, there's not one of them that's going to admit they're OTO. So... because
why? Yeah. Why is that? Is it that the OTO has a more kind of hardcore background, like a little bit darker background than the Masons? Or what would be the reasoning for that?
Yeah, we're talking black magic, ritual, sex magic.
Okay.
So yeah, the things that go on inside the OTO are a little bit different.
would you say then that OTO is more aligned with Hollywood than Freemasonry?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And yeah. Is that what we're seeing when we're watching the Video Music Awards or the Super Bowl halftime show, and we're seeing all these things and we're going, that looks weird? Are we seeing OTO type rituals?
I was absolutely able to predict Katy Perry's ritual ceremony or show at the Super Bowl. You can go check my work. You can see that before it ever happened, I said, she'll most likely come out on a lion. If she's wearing diamonds, that would be even more so, because this is also a sign of mind control, of a high profile mind control slave. But she had to come out on a lion holding a fire chalice, because this was Aleister Crowley's card for strength. And, I'm trying to remember the exact details that it gave when I was making the prediction, but it was, it makes me want to pull out the Crowley deck and have a look again. But you see, it was based off of Aleister Crowley's tarot, and that was where, cause it was a sign of the end times, really.
Right.
And, so it was, yeah. And then the fact that lion came out covered in diamonds, if you go to Fritz Springmeier's How to Create Your Own Undetectable Illuminati Mind Control Slave, which is quite a title for a book.
Yeah, it is.
It's a pretty frightening book as well. I don't recommend reading it casually, because you read all the disturbing things that go into satanic ritual abuse and mind control. So, it's a pretty horrific book, but he lists in there the different signs and symbols that the mind control agents use for triggers, and diamonds were one for not only presidential model mind control slaves, but also to activate, sleeper mind control agents. So, there was a lot put out into this to actually activate what might be a cause of what's going on right now.
makes when you mentioned the diamonds, you mentioned presidential level mind control. I was going Marilyn Monroe, diamonds are a girl's best friend. Is that a okay?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, when you start digging in.
Yeah, when you start digging in, it's like watching, you know, you watch a movie or an award show. And then you're watching, it's like, oh, I'm watching a different award show than you're watching. I'm watching the one where I'm waiting for Madonna to kiss Britney Spears and waiting for that transfer of, you know, I'm out, you're the new one and all of that. It seems like, so I'm curious though, obviously these, let's just talk about the female singers, Beyonce, we've seen her zone out at Brooklyn Nets games and things like that. Britney Spears obviously has their problems. Disney's got a really bad reputation of screwing kids up young. What is the star's role in this? They're traumatized, obviously. They're broken down. But would a Katy Perry know, would she understand the symbolic nature of a tiger or you know, in diamonds and all that? Or would she just say, or would somebody say, this is the producer of the show. We've got a great show lined up for you. You're going to stand here. You're going to walk in and would she be in on the details of that? Or would she just be sort of off to the side until they needed her?
I would definitely think off to the side.
Okay.
There are some that know the rituals they're within, Madonna being clearly one who knows her role as this high witch Kabbalist and, you know, Britney. She was such a victim that she couldn't gain the power of what she was being put through. But she was certainly aware of what she was being put through. She had so many personalities. She tried to shave her head so that they couldn't use her in the rituals anymore. She was thrown into Promises Clinic where she scrawled 666 on her forehead, screaming she was the Antichrist and would run around naked, speaking the satanic language that scared even her bodyguards. So she was fairly aware. I had some videos on my YouTube channel before they banned me for life and have completely scrubbed me from YouTube. Like I don't exist on YouTube, not just my channel, but any videos anyone has ever put up of me is gone.
Well, I'm not even on YouTube. I keep getting strikes on them for videos I did months and months ago. So I don't even put it up there. So.
Yeah,
you'll get me instantly banned for sure. I mean,
yeah, it's true.
Which would be a feather in my cap, to be honest. To be banned because of a video by you, especially, I'd be like, hey, listen, if anyone's going to get you kicked off, might as well be Freeman.
Hey,
but
let's talk vaccines. Yeah,
right. but these people, they like the Britney Spears, and she gets scrambled in the head, and we hear her, you know, speaking in different. You know, we see the, I think it was the Barbara Walters interview where she, hello, whoa. And you're going,
yeah.
Okay, something's definitely wrong. I would suggest it's not limited to Hollywood actresses because I've seen Serena Williams do the same thing when they were filming a documentary series about her, where she busted into different personalities, different people, different characters. One of them had like a British accent and one of, you know, it was the same sort of stuff. And I'm watching this and I'm going, there's a lot of Britney Spears in this Serena Williams documentary. Is that, have you seen that go, sort of escape from the Hollywood layer and start to infect sports or, newscasters or what? I mean, is it everywhere?
Most likely. I don't watch a lot. I don't watch sports or news. So,
yeah. Well.
But yeah, it has become a part of, I mean, it's now open, right? It's where you go watch Clone Wars or you go watch your latest DC special superhero. And it's just out in the open now. I mean, you look at Stranger Things and it's based off of MK Ultra. And there were some others that just, you know, straight out MK Ultra, the United States of Tara, these things. So it has now become part of the story. I mean, it's like open conspiracy now.
Yeah, it's not even hidden really all that. It's hidden, just hidden in plain sight where there's a United States of Terror. They're like, let's celebrate this person that has a fractured psyche and has multiple personalities from something horrible that we've done to them.
Exactly. You know, which altar would you like? You know, wouldn't you like to have altars like this?
Isn't there one like the Santa Barbara diet something or other, and it was like Reese Witherspoon or one of those ones, and it was like they, I forget who it was, I'm butchering this, but it was it's a show, like a series that went out, and it was they were all drinking each other's blood, and you're like, oh, okay, well, that's kind of weird. But you know what initially kind of led me to you was I was having a conversation with Lindsay Sharman from Rogue Ways. Shout out to her for reminding me that I did need to speak to you, and that was because she and I were having a conversation about clones. And I said, you know, I have a real interest in this. I don't pretend to know much about it. I know that just because I don't know, it doesn't mean it isn't true or isn't real or whatever. I've heard some stories. I've seen the Donald Marshall stuff where he's talking about I was dancing for them. And I don't know how much of that is true. But she mentioned that Lindsay had gone on, I forget how she described it, astral travel or something. At night, she was asleep. She left her body. She went somewhere. I guess that wasn't, it would freak me out because I've never done that before, but apparently she was comfortable enough with this that it wasn't maybe the first time that this had happened. She had a distinct feeling of going to a place that was well underground. And during this trip, she said she wound up in this place that was, she just described it as a clone factory. And the thing that was going on there was that there were all of these clones that were, for whatever reason, she had the impression that they were, their attitude was, coach, put me in the game. You know, I'm the backup Joe Biden or whatever. It wasn't Joe Biden, but you know, I'm the backup president. I'm like the third clone of the president. But they were all very enthusiastic about wanting to be put into reality somehow. Taken out of, you know, up, go upstairs, go into the real world, and now we're putting you in there. So what do you know about clones?
I know the clone of Barack Obama ended up as and I'm not talking about Barack, I'm talking about another Barack Obama. He's doing commercials as Barack Obama in Indonesia. Because there's certain clones that just didn't make it, right? So, well, you get a job, do commercials. I mean, check it out. There's an identical Barack Obama. I mean, it's not his name, but he does commercials as Barack Obama because he is exactly, you know, cloning. People act like this is some extravagant science or something that was so beyond that, you know. Oh, and yet we've been cloning cattle since the 80s, right?
Yeah.
The FDA.
Dolly the sheep.
Well, yeah, Dolly, you know, Dolly stood out later, right? That we've been cloning for since the 20s. And then Dolly came about because he used a adult stem cell, which had never been done before. And that's what made Dolly stand out. He didn't even know he was going to be famous when he cloned Dolly. He just thought, you know, let me try this. He didn't even take notes on which sheep he took the nipple from.
Really?
That he cloned Dolly from. But yes, so cloning, I mean, we had cloning, you know, your pet, all of that. I'm trying to think of the name of that company off the top of my head, but either way, Boya Life, right? So there's all these cloning companies that have been around. And when you look to early cloning, okay, so in the 1920s, 1930s, there was Hans Spemann and Victor Hamburger. And they were a couple of cloners that were just messing around with amphibians. And so, like, to give you an idea of how simple cloning is, the very first clones, Hans Spemann just took a hair off of his baby's head. Like, you know, that kind of guy would pull hair out of his baby's head, but
right.
And then he'd use that to splice cut the egg in half. And then he made his own glass tools and he would suck out the DNA and put it into another egg and then insert that into another amphibian. And then he would sit back and marvel when he accidentally created a monster, like a two-headed salamander. And then he'd sit back and wonder why the two heads would battle over food when it was going to the same belly. And he just found these type of weird anomalies fascinating. So that's cloning in the 1920s, right? And then you start progressing that forward with CRISPR, and you have now gene editing technology where you can alter things. And so they started making glow-in-the-dark cats for AIDS research and glow-in-the-dark pigs and sheep. And these were all coming out of Paraguay and Uruguay, the very places the Nazis went, right? That was where the Nazis went after World War II. And Mengele had his town of twins down there in Paraguay. And so if you go down there, you'll find they're making glow in the dark sheep and glow in the dark cats. And then you find out these glow in the dark pets. Well, they're not pets, but I want to start glow pets. I wanted to buy off all of these glowing cats and start selling them, you know. but they produce glow in the dark cats. That's the point, right? Like, so like, you know, if you alter the genetics of a cat and make it glow in the dark by putting in jellyfish genes, then using luciferase, right? That's what makes it glow, as luciferase. Then they would, these cats produce glow in the dark cats. So it's, you know, it's genetic line. It doesn't just make one line. They continue to produce this genetic line, which, you know, again, let's get back to vaccinations, but gene altering is for eternity. Let's just keep that straight. So cloning is not a big deal, right? It's not hard. I remember watching when the congressional hearings on cloning, and next thing you know, I'm watching C-SPAN. This guy walks up in a puffy white spacesuit, and Claude Virilion, later known as Ra-El, was announcing their first clone had been born, Eve, in December of 2000. And they had Bridget Bousselet of Clone Aid there. They had Dr. Savros, who had claimed to clone humans. We have China claiming to have cloned humans. And this is all back in Y2K. So this wasn't anything coming. Then in 1985, and this is the one that triggered me. This is the one that kind of got me started in this. I read this article back in 1985 in Nature magazine, which was also in the New York Times, about them cloning mummies. So there were three mummies that were cloned. You can go look this up. You know, genetic material kept intact through mummification.
Well, let me guess. It's Akhenaten.
Well, they had not claimed to have Akhenaten's DNA yet. So they had announced that they had cloned three mummies from the dynasty of Akhenaten. So the 18th dynasty. And this was 1985. You can go look it up. That they had genetically crafted. Now, this is not to say that they cloned the cells. They didn't bring the cells to life.
Okay.
But the mystery was, why did mummification save a viable cell? So there's this huge mystery of mummification from ancient Egypt that we do not know. So if you look at Stalin, the Russians tried to mummify Stalin. He's rotting. Every attempt at mummification has failed. There's a secret that the ancient Egyptians knew that we don't. And they, so this saved a viable cell for 3,000 years to be cloned in the 21st century. So that was 1985. They announced that they had cloned these mummies, but not brought them to life. So that's been rattling around in my brain, you know, for all that time. And
rightly so, because it's kind of a big deal and very weird and an unusual thing to go out and do. And you obviously have a deep understanding of Egyptology, you know, the what's going on there. You're like, well, you could have picked anything and you picked this. Okay, fine. Where are you going with this in 1985? So my guess is they have vastly improved upon that and done something with that.
Well, that was my thought. So on my third television show, Return of the Nephilim, back in 2004, I announced this thought, you know, hey, they've already cloned mummies. So what could come of this? And I didn't know that this whole Barack Amnaten, Barack Obama story was coming, right? I had no idea that I was going to be actually talking about this. So you can hear me talking about the cloning of mummies long before we ever heard the word or the name Barack Obama. But when Obama came in and I recognized, and many people recognized, how similar he was to Akhenaten. Now, let's point out Akhenaten. Okay, so he's the creator of monotheism, right? He's the guy who did away with all the multitude of gods and started the one god system. Akhenaten was known as the cone-headed pharaoh, and he was very mysterious in that he completely altered Egypt. He moved the capital to Amarna. He started this whole new religion. and he seemed to be extraterrestrial in origin because of his cone head and the weirdness. And he brought about the most natural artwork that Egypt had ever seen, especially like depicting himself with the children and things of this nature that pharaohs had never done. So Akhenaten also is the claimed head of the Rosicrucian order. So if you were to go read Rosicrucian books and works, they're often written by Akhenaten. So even the magical practices of the Rosicrucians come from Akhenaten. And then, of course, Freemasonry also worships Akhenaten. And you'll find a lot of this in like the Benjamin Franklin Lodge in Philadelphia, which I've got photographs of all these lodges. I've been to every Grand Lodge in America. I've been to Grand Lodge of Australia and London as well. And you can find all of this on my website, freemantv.com, to see inside of all these lodges, to see what I'm talking about. But so Akhenaten's a big deal, right? It's not some random pharaoh. And so I put the artwork together. I split Barack Obama's face in half, and I put half of Akhenaten and half of Barack, and they fit perfectly. I didn't manipulate it. I was like, oh my God. But even then, I wasn't really thinking that he was a clone of Akhenaten yet, right? But I was putting the theory out there because I already knew that this was going on.
Yeah.
I also knew that there would be an asteroid threat during his administration during Obama. So I threw an asteroid in there. It's part of the story, right? I've been tracking the incoming bolides for quite some time and the rise of the Space Force. Mm-hmm. So I've been talking about the Space Force since 2000, 2004. Actually, I put it in my 9/11 artwork because I felt like the Space Force had a lot to do with the bringing down of the Twin Towers. One of my more famous NFTs, actually, is my artwork from 9/11/2001. It sold for 0.911 ETH. But anyway,
of course,
but so I had added this asteroid because it's part of the storyline. It'll be coming up again. We'll be seeing this asteroid threat, and we can get to some of that in a second.
Yeah,
but then. Next thing I know, they announce, oh my God, there's an asteroid hurtling towards planet Earth is going to destroy all life in 2029 or 2036. Maybe this year, they said, you know, back then, but not likely. Well, the name of that asteroid was Apophis, and it came from a group of asteroids known as the Aten. Well, Apophis just happens to be the serpent deity of destruction of Akhenaten's religion, basically the Satan of his religion. And it just happened to be the very asteroid coming in while Obama took office. Whoa. But then I started looking deeper into Akhenaten's family, and I found that Akhenaten's Egypt actually was ruled by Queen Ti, this mysterious black woman who had come from Nubia that no one really knows where she came from. She came into the Egyptian pantheon, or the Egyptian pharaonic ship by age 5. And there's no real history of Queen Ti. But so I was like, well, let me check her out. And I go and I look, and it's Michelle Obama. Go look it up. You know, just Google Queen T. If you tell me that's not Michelle Obama, then I don't know what to tell you. So I took her face and I split it in half with her high school photo. I have this on my website for you to do yourself, right? Just take Michelle Obama's high school photo and the depiction of Queen T, cut them in half, put them together, see if they don't exactly match. You can't even tell I did it, right?
Yeah,
it looks like
I've seen the pictures. It's crazy,
crazy, right?
How it's like identical. It just looks like somebody that's in one half is in one costume and the other half's in another costume, but it's the same person. It's wild.
It's freaky. And so that would actually be Akhenaten's mother. Right. Technically, his mother. I mean, in Egypt, they don't have actual mothers. They have birth moms and they, you know, but technically she was his mom. So Barack Obama, if this were the case, then would actually be married to his mother. Right.
It's better than some of the theories that I've heard out there about who Michelle is.
Oh, man. As soon as that Michelle is a man theory came, my whole theory was crushed. Nobody was going to listen to me anymore. You know, it was
the man theory sounds a little bit more. I don't know. I like yours. Yours is way more interesting, though.
And I got the details. Time traveling. I got the details.
You may be a dude, but is she a time traveling dude? No. So let's talk about the time travel. I mean, that is a really That's a really crazy coincidence. I don't know if coincidence is the right word, but
well, here's what
connection to make.
Yeah, I mean, I'm putting this together, and then I remember, of course, that Akhenaten always shown with his two daughters. So I went and pulled up his two daughters, and they are Malay and Sasha, without question. But then I was still having to admit on the air that, hey, I can't prove this because they have never admitted they have Akhenaten's DNA. They've never admitted they have Queen T. And so almost a year later, after I put all of this out, even put the movie out already, Obama cloning in the coming space war. And all of a sudden, Zahi Hawass, the head of the Giza Plateau, announces, and I have it on VHS. Okay. I was watching and recording this. It was called Egypt Live. It was when they announced, so I have it on VHS. I have Akhenaten's DNA on video. And Zahi Hawass announced, actually, we have Akhenaten's DNA. And, but I wasn't going to tell anyone, he says, because we had to build our own cloning or DNA lab under the Cairo Museum before we announced this. And this caused quite an uproar in archaeology. I mean, you know, they've been holding DNA and the mummies of this family for so long and then lying about it. The whole KV-55 mummy mystery, they're saying, well, we don't know who it is. So this actually caused a major uproar in archaeology when Zahi announced this. So it wasn't a big, I mean, a small deal. It was really quite a big deal. But there it was. I was like, oh my God, guys, you know, here I've been a year talking about this and suddenly they're admitting they have the DNA and a clone lab in the Cairo Museum.
I feel bad because I've been to that Cairo Museum. I've spent several days going through the whole place and they never let me into the DNA lab. How dare.
Now, I was at the Philosophical Research Society of Manly P. Hall. Mm-hmm. Where I'm an honored guest. I tell you, I get honored by many of these secret societies and brought in, and I don't even expect it, but I was totally an honored guest when I walked in there. Well, it turned out that was the day that Zahi Hawass was going to be giving a presentation at the Philosophical Research Society and trying to claim that pyramids were built by slaves and all of this. Like, he stuck to his guns in that whole story of slaves.
Where he was going to... he was going to speak again with Graham Hancock and he didn't show up.
Yeah, that was a different time, same area of time.
Okay.
But guess who was there?
Who?
And I was there to see it. George and Barbara Bush.
Really?
Yes. They were there. So I started asking them at the Philosophical Research Society. No, I'm sorry. This was at the ARE. This was at the Association of Research and Enlightenment, Edgar Cayce.
Okay.
Okay. So Edgar Cayce's group all believes in Atlantis. Mm-hmm. And they have paintings and everything all around the ARE. And they have all of Akhenaten's stuff there, right? They have his ring and they have a bunch of other crazy stuff from Armana. Don't know if any of it's legit or not. But the ARE, the Association of Research and Enlightenment by Edgar Cayce, are a psychical research society, very much like the ones that started the Nazis. And they then have Zahi Hawass coming in and speaking about how the pyramids were built by slaves. So I'm asking them at the ARE, well, you know, how do you feel about this? Where you guys, you know, are obviously depicting these great pyramids as something mystical and magical and beyond comprehension. And of ancient Atlantis. And now you've got this guy coming in trying to say that none of that's true. Why would you even host this event? They didn't really have an answer. They were just like, well, because obviously it was a major cover up. You know, Zahi knew all of this, you know, but yet he was going to come in and pretend like he didn't. But there were George and Barbara right there at the ARE. So what is that? You know,
what is that? Yeah. Speaking of clones, we've got Barbara Bush really looking like Aleister Crowley herself, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that, man, that story, yeah, that one goes back to her mom, Pauline Pierce, who was an avid fan of Aleister Crowley and would go off to France to have the sexual rituals with Crowley. So he was trying to birth a moon child, and they would eat feces and blood and semen and all the things that Lady Gaga puts in her perfume. And yeah, it's true.
It's perfume. It's supposed to smell good, right?
That's why they're trying to get you to eat this stuff, right? Blood, gotcha. Feces, right? This is the Aleister Crowley sacrament of the OTO. That's OTO, why.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, it's so Aleister Crowley most likely did impregnate Pauline Pierce and gave birth to his granddaughter, which would be Barbara Bush. Yeah.
You talk about two people that are made for one another, you know, George H.W. Bush being I've described him as one of the top 10 worst human beings of the 20th century, but to marry Barbara Bush or to be, you know,
to be given Crowley's daughter,
that's kind of a match made in hell for that. Well, let's get back to that that asteroid. I think you were going to say that they Zahi Hawass, they announced that they have Akhenaten's DNA. Okay, yeah. That was the missing piece, right? That was the, right. Well, my whole theory of Obama is great and all, and it looks exactly like him, but they've said they don't have this. But once they announced that they did have it, that was the missing technical part that you sort of needed to, I don't know how somebody's going to actually prove that without taking the Obamas and,
if I could just get a piece of Obama's hair, that's all I need.
That's all you need. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Because I have the video footage of Zahi showing Akhenaten's DNA. So then I could just compare the two.
Yeah. If we could find like one of his half smoked cigarette butts or something, we could pull it off that, but that's not going to do it.
Well, why do you think Madonna runs around with the DNA cleanup crew?
No.
Yeah.
God damn, I don't know. That is DNA cleanup crew.
That's bizarre, right? Why would somebody pay for this service? But she does.
Whoa, that is that's a whole new industry, huh? You get to be like super important and famous, and then there's some guy's like, I provide a service that you didn't know you needed, but you need it. And they're like, oh, okay, yeah, I'll pay you to clean up my DNA. That's wild. Back to the asteroid though, because let's talk about Apophis, because this one kind of, you mentioned vaccines and then you mentioned Apophis and everyone goes, oh, there's no connection between the two. Ah, but maybe there is, because when COVID rolled out, and I know this doesn't have to do with Apophis necessarily, but asteroids in general. When COVID rolled out and everyone was all going to die and we're all dead, and they brought the hospital barge ships into New York and LA and maybe some other places, and they built out the Javits Center in New York. They converted that into this field hospital, and they built these random field hospitals all over the country that were waiting for massive casualties. They were set up for like trauma, if I recall correctly, and some other things that didn't really actually fit with COVID related symptoms. They were all built and they were all there and nobody ever came. And then they quietly went away. And then my little brain starts going, that's weird. That seems unnatural. And then I start finding out that there was a cluster of asteroids that were coming that looked to be heading towards Earth and potentially impacting around the same time. Can you elaborate on that?
Now this is something that I have been tracking for a long time. I used to have a spot on my website called the Space War News. A lot of the links ended up dead, so I just kind of took it down. But I've been tracking the incoming bolides or fireballs that have been causing sonic booms and earthquakes. These are bizarre. The first one I tracked was over the HAARP facility back in 99, I think it was, somewhere around there. They were testing HAARP as a meteor deflection shield, and then there just happened to be a meteor heading straight for it. I then started to question, wait, have they weaponized meteors? Then they launched the X-37B, the super secret space shuttle, the flying Twinkie.
Gone around the planet for years and years.
The planet for decades now, right? Like, yeah, or at least a decade. longest running robotic space shuttle mission going on, right? And when they launched the X-37B, there was a mysterious explosion in space that was recorded by an amateur astronomer and then another meteor attack. We had the Russian one that occurred. So I started thinking about the, you know, weaponization of these fireballs and meteors, because who are you going to blame, right?
Right.
Now, it's going to get really interesting because Russia is backing out of the International Space Station right now. Mm-hmm. And we've been using the Cosmodrome to launch to the International Space Station for all this time. Ever since the space shuttles shut down, we've been relying on Russia to get to the International Space Station.
Is that in the place in Kazakhstan?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yeah. And so, this whole space force was starting to get formed. Exactly. Well, now we're going to have to rely on SpaceX, eh? But I was tracking the formation of the space force and what they were going to need to bring this about. And so asteroids, meteors were one of the cue threats that they needed to come in. And I guarantee it will be. It just hasn't played out yet. You know, maybe by 2029 on the return of Apophis, they'll be making a bigger deal out of it.
I'd like to remind the audience, the Wernher von Braun prediction
exactly
had asteroids in it before the UFO invasion.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Exactly. Terrorists and then Red Scare, terrorism, asteroids and aliens. Mm-hmm. And Carol Rosen hates me for some reason. I haven't been able to find out yet why. I don't know why. I thought I was doing a good job for her. But anyway, because, you know, I've been promoting that with Wernher von Braun theory all this time, you know, and some reason she's really opposed to me speaking, which is interesting. I find that fascinating. I don't know. It was just another host had told me Carol Rosen like vehemently wanted me not to go on the air, you know, and I'm like, why? But anyway, yes. Yeah, so Wernher von Braun, it was part of this theory and what was coming in the asteroids and all of that. So when Pence came out and after his Masonic handshakes and his secret coins and all the things that happened behind the scenes with Pence, I don't know if you've seen all of that. He was given Masonic shakes and he was given secret coins and all these little things behind Trump's back. He's showing us 15 days to slow the spread, right? And this was the beginning of the lockdown. And they had announced the date of the lockdown. And as you say, the Mercy and the Comfort were put off on either side of the continent, these two large ships, and then the field hospitals filled with trauma doctors. Well, at that moment, General O'Shaughnessy, now he is was the head of NORTHCOM. He mysteriously resigned in the midst of this crisis. All right. But General O'Shaughnessy was combatant commander at that point, basically. He had taken over control. You know, that's what happens. That's the line. So when there's a major emergency, we go to combatant commander, which is the head of NORTHCOM. So at that time of COVID, it was General O'Shaughnessy. And he broadcast from deep underground inside of Cheyenne Mountain from Space Command. Mm-hmm. And you can watch this video on YouTube. I have it on my website as well if you want to look at it. And he talked about putting the Mercy in the field hospitals ready and all of that. Mm-hmm. But no mention of asteroids, meteors, or any significant threat. But if you were onto this tip and you were thinking conspiratorial and tracking this story as long as I had, that was exactly where my brain went. I'm like, wait, trauma doctors, not medical doctors in these field hospitals? What's going on here in the lockdown? This is so bizarre. So I went and looked, and Jet Propulsion Laboratories actually has a near Earth objects tracking system. So you can go and watch. And this was the largest horde of asteroids hurtling towards planet Earth ever. You know, I went back 500 years in this whole thing to see, and there's never been this group of meteors coming straight at us like this. And, you know, it was a perfect time for the threat. Now, how it missed us, if they used some of this technology, if something more happened to stop it, because we should have gotten hit. And then you can go look, and on the Monday of the lockdown, there was one announcement, nearest miss of asteroid threat on planet Earth, the Monday of lockdown. There was one that wasn't detected by the near Earth objects of Jet Propulsion Laboratories, which of course was started by OTO, Jet Propulsion Laboratories.
Yeah. Jack Parsons and those guys. Yeah, not exactly like the most like a well-balanced group of people to be in charge of monitoring space.
Exactly. So, and they also contact extraterrestrials through Typhonian magic, which is the symbol of the X-Files. So if you ask one of these OTO who connect with extraterrestrials through ritual magic what the Mark of the Beast looks like, they will show you the X-Files Xbox logo or even the Apple X operating system. You know, you'll find it all over the place, even Ethereum being the cryptocurrency of NFTs starts with the OX as well. So that actually that X-Files, X-Men, Xbox logo is their symbol for the alien satanic Mark of the Beast. But what happened though was all of a sudden General O'Shaughnessy just retired or resigned and he went to go work for SpaceX.
Yeah.
And he was replaced by who is now in charge of Northcom.
Kirk?
Van Kirk.
Yes.
General Van Herk. Yes. Thank you. And he would become basically president if there was this major event. And what was curious about Van Herk, well, first is O'Shaughnessy resigning during a major crisis and
weird.
Going to work for SpaceX.
Very strange.
And then Van Herk, General Van Herk, taking over actually comes from the 509th bomb wing, which is the very group that took care of Roswell.
Right.
And now we have the ET story coming in after the asteroid story.
Yeah.
So we are following Werner Braun.
Yeah. And the continuity of government spider web is a wild one too, where we outsource. I mean, everyone's like, oh, well, if in the event of something going wrong, the vice president will take over for the president. It's like, yeah, but what about continuity of government? Those guys will take over for everybody, right? Look, there's just so much going on out there. It's hard to know where to focus my attention. So I just talk about the stuff that I like. And you're always talking about the stuff, the same sort of stuff that I like. And I'm just really grateful that you were able to spend some time here to come on and just, you know, tell us a little bit about the things that aren't going to wind up on CNN. We love it here. What's the best place for people to find you? Is it freemantv.com?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And people should go there and definitely support your work. They can become a paid member. Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
Let's do it, man. Let's get everybody to put their money where their mouth is. Let's vote with our dollars, pay for our attention, you know, get rid of the mainstream media. Why would you need the mainstream media when you've got freemantv.com? Like, holy crap, there's so much going on there. Freeman, you're the best. Thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate you. I love that you've been doing this for a while. You're
Rockfin now too. Since I've been shut down by YouTube, I started putting everything up on Rockfin. So yep. All of and your followers on Rockfin, come over, check out Frames and Fly.
For sure. We do. And we do our big group show, The Union of the Unwanted, our group roundtable discussion every other Monday night. We do that live on Rockfin. We did it last night. We had all these doctors and Pfizer whistleblowers and all that good stuff. So there's a lot going on Rockfin. Everyone can check out. I'm going to have Freeman's links in the description. If you are so inclined, go take a look at his stuff and support his work. Thanks, everybody. If you want to connect with us, the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com, and you can follow me on Twitter @macroaggression. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you soon.